Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hi, this is Henry Gilroy, co-executive producer of Star Wars Rebels. You're listening to Aggressive Negotiations.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, your little corner of the Star Wars galaxy that takes you all over the place. And I've got to say, I love this passenger liner, this Lady of Mindor. Man, this place is nice.
Yeah.
Talking about hitting the galaxy in style with my good friend and Jedi Master, John Mills.
Well, I'm definitely stretching out on the Lido deck because I know that they're going to have the all-you-can-eat buffet shortly. Available on the Lady of Mindor, and
the Nerf snake is nice and lean.
If you have ever been on a cruise, you always know where the next size up for your clothing, and Lady of Mindor does not disappoint. So
it does not.
It does not very much.
Well, hey, before we dive into what we're going to be talking about tonight, which we've already hinted at, you could find us on Twitter. A couple of different places where you should be following us. At Join Nerd Party is the full network account. And then if you love Star Wars talk and everything Aggressive Negotiations, please do follow us over there at the Jedi Masters. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. We're over on iTunes or anywhere you get your podcasts, really. But if you hit us up on Apple Podcasts with a star rating review, we'd really appreciate that. It does help more Star Wars fans find the show. And if you leave us a review, we will call you out on the show and thank you for your review. So you can be Aggressive Negotiations famous.
It's the best kind.
It is. Yeah. It really is. I mean, we're a Parsec Award winner for a reason, right?
Yeah, there you go. Spread the wealth, man. Come on.
Whoa, man. My head is getting too big. I just can't. Anyway, last but not least, you can find us on thenerdparty.com. And while you're over there, if you'd like to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Aggressive Negotiations, and John and I will get that email and be able to talk to you about that. So we are fast approaching Solo, a Star Wars movie or film or story or whatever it is.
Star Wars Anthology. Let's yes. Roll it all the way back to Star Wars Anthology.
Yes, the Star Wars Anthology. But because we're doing that, we decided we'd go back and read Brian Daley's original Han Solo books. And we've reached Han Solo's Revenge, which I got to say, it was fascinating to get to this one and see how I feel like he grew a little bit as a writer. In this Star Wars universe, and at the same time, very much doubled down on his take of Star Wars.
I thought that I agree with that whole thing. Han Solo's Revenge. I mean, we're not going to go blow by blow on the plot because, you know, it's an adventure story with Han Solo and Chewie. They find themselves in a mess again, and they have to get around. And it's really an exercise. But I think it's an even better exercise in world building for the Star Wars galaxy. This is, again, coming out in a time where people are starving. They want Star Wars. And it's not the current climate where you can, you know, get it at at any moment wherever you want it. And so here's a book. Oh, it's a Star Wars book. Great. I can learn even more about Star Wars. And I got a kick out of this one. I got a kick out of Star's End. But I agree with you. It very much feels like somebody who's just planting their feet, who's just figuring out how it works. And I think Han Solo's Revenge has a much better flow to it. And I think that it's actually better plotted. And it proceeds in a much more logical story sort of sense.
What did you think about the beginning where they're on that planet Kamar?
Yes.
And they're showing holo documentaries to the natives and they have accidentally created Lutherans.
Yes. I think it's pretty darn. Yeah. But
that's the Simpsons reference, by the way.
Yeah. But that's like that's a brilliant thing in and of itself, right? I can completely see Han Solo accidentally starting a religion somewhere when he's, you know, he just wants to make some money. Hey, great, I'm making money. Hey, they're giving me stuff. Oh, I did what? And like, I think that's very creative. I think that it was a great way to introduce the audience. In a sense, it echoes sort of the way the movies are structured, but it reminded me of like Raiders of the Lost Ark or any of the Indiana Jones movies where you have like a prologue scene, basically, that before you kick into the main story, and it instantly establishes the character. Because think about with Raiders, you instantly establish Indiana Jones in that opening sequence where he's going for the idol, he's facing any danger, there's a little bit of humor, Belloc shows up, all of that stuff. I think this accomplishes that whole thing. And, you know, it very much makes it the way that I think that any sort of like serial or sequel should work, where you can jump in and you don't have to have experienced the first one.
One of the interesting things is the creation of this idea of the Badlands, which almost seems, which they use in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, but also kind of reminds me of what we think of as the wild space or the unknown regions there, what those would kind of later be, where there's just a lot of planets that a lot of people don't necessarily go to. And, you know, Han and Chewie, because of their run-in with the corporate sector authority in the first book, are trying to stay away from them in that sector of space. But they find themselves pulled back into that because, well, Han and Chewie are in massive debt still. So they've got to find a way to make some money. And when the, you know, aliens on the planet Kamar find out that this is a false religion, well, it's time to leave.
I think that once you go from that jumping point, though, I think that what's so much fun through the rest of the book is discovering all of these terms that you mentioned in the opening, the Lady of Mindor. Luke Skywalker in the Shadows of Mindor was a book, if I recall correctly.
Yes, it is.
So Daly is actually establishing things that they go back and use in later works from time to time, or at least pay tribute to. Like, this is the first use of the term swoop in this book.
Yep.
And they actually describe what we eventually saw on screen when the special edition came up, that it was a pair of handlebars with an engine. You know, it's a motorcycle. But I think that that sort of thing is really what is even more fun. Like, Star's End feels like somebody who's feeling their way through and trying to get some stuff set up. This feels like somebody who maybe has had time to look at the source material and pick a few more things out that, or develop a few more things that, you know, really come to fruition. It even addresses the whole idea of, again, you know, like we got with the corporate sector in the first one and Wild Space now, and, you know, all, you know, the Badlands rather, all of these things where, again, it's that much more complex galaxy than just the black and white. And it's so fascinating to me because, again, like, we're so trapped in this idea of Empire versus Rebels, First Order versus Resistance, and there's so much more out there. It's like it's instantly set up for bigger stories or different stories than that. And it's like, this really speaks to that. And I think that even the fact that it flatly addresses the corporate sector, the Imperials, and other authorities. You know, like, there are several points where it says that there's even more out there than you're even thinking of. And it just makes the galaxy, I think, just such a bigger place. It really spurs the imagination instead of feeding it to you.
It reminds me of all of the Clone Wars arcs where we followed bounty hunters. And, or, you know, I'm even thinking of when Zero the Hutt is being tracked down by Obi-Wan Kenobi and Quinlan Vos, and, you know, they go to now Hutta, and, you know, like, you get this whole other side to the galaxy that isn't involved in all of these other things, you know, like a massive good and evil type of battle. And so I love that. I really love the that feeling, and I think that this taps into that. And honestly, you know, it's funny because we were talking with our good friend Bruce over on the Star Wars Report about this idea, you know, of how do you expand Star Wars, right? And I think this kind of gives us an idea of some of the things that you could do with Star Wars. And obviously, that's the idea behind Solo. You know, like,
yeah,
we can use Solo to open up, I think, a whole new part of the galaxy that people haven't seen, get them interested in that. And then if they like it, heck, we can start making more of this kind of material. So I think you're absolutely right. Daily finds a way to tap into that here at the very beginning, basically. And it's only now that I feel like, you know, we're starting to truly, I mean, I take that back. They did it in the Clone Wars, but we're starting to see them try and find other avenues outside of the episodes because they know they need more than just that.
Yes, and I think just tangentially, the thing that spurs in my brain is this idea maybe that Solo, the film, could give us a side character that gets their own spin-off movie. How cool would that be? You know, like,
yeah,
let's
absolutely have
Solo as our establishing character, our in, and then what? I'd be ready for a Lando series just based on the.
Oh my gosh! You know, yes.
I mean, I was ready for a Lando series decades ago, honestly. So, you know,
everything you've heard about me is true.
Yes, I mean, yeah. Let's sign Donald Glover to a 5-film deal, please. Just
well,
already
I mean,
based on the trailer,
we know that you've got Alden Ehrenreich signed to 3 films. I can't believe that they wouldn't do the same thing for Donald Glover just as, you know, you want to make sure if this is a huge hit, you can do something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems like there's no reason to not maybe do another one if this is a big hit. Lando and Han, if they really hit it off here.
But see, this is what's so interesting to me is obviously Lando as a character, while Daly is writing these books, doesn't exist yet. He's
right.
being created, but he doesn't exist yet. And what's so fun about this is Han Solo being established independent of any other character we already know. The impulse now, as evidenced by the Solo movie, is that, well, if you're going to tell something from Solo's past, people are going to want to see Lando. And I think that makes this even more fun because of the fact that it's just Han and Chewie. And, you know, I think it really illustrates how bare bones the amount of knowledge was, you know, coming out of Star Wars and how we really do get a sense of Han himself independent of Luke and Leia. You know, I mean, even think about the fact what series now, I mean, I guess you could say the Marvel movies or something like that, but like this is a book series about not the main character of your hit film. That's a pretty ballsy move. You know, like, I mean, Han obviously was a recognized, you know, heartthrob and everybody fell in love with Han immediately. But the impulse is always, well, I'm going to write books about Luke Skywalker. I'm going to write books about my main character. People want to know about this person. And instead, they're like, yeah, write it about Han. Han's cool. You know, like, I wonder if, do you think that that's just response to the reception of Han? Or do you think that's a specific decision because Lucas knew that Luke was trickier territory for somebody to tread and he wanted that story for himself?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can only look at Splinter of the Mind's Eye and kind of see that, Luke is somebody who should be off, you know, off the radar for somebody to write other than Lucas at this point. As we're telling that story and the Force and all that, you know, it's too tricky, I think. But at this point, you know, Han, yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think he's an easy character to have somebody be able to write because you know exactly who he is, and you know, just have the author dial that back a little bit. So basically, as we said in the first one, when we're talking about Star's End, this is Temple of Doom.
Yeah,
Han Solo. You know, it's a few years before you meet him, and he's had those experiences. And what's great is, again, this experience here when they get mixed up with the slaves that they've been hired. They don't know what they're going to be, you know, carrying as cargo, and it turns out slaves. And Chewie and Han are like, "Oh heck no, we are not doing that,"
right?
Because they don't want any part of that kind of life. I think you have the opportunity to tell this character's story and why he would make that turn in A New Hope.
Well, and it even speaks to something that Ron Howard mentioned in the Star Wars show, where he talked about the interesting dynamic of Han is the fact that he doesn't want to acknowledge that he's a good person at his core. He wants to pretend he's not who he is. You know, like, and, you know, and that's a terrific onion to peel to begin with. And at the same time, though, we're you know, you have Splinter of the Mind's Eye and you have these Han Solo books. And it's interesting to me. It would be really easy to assign some sort of thing where it's like Leia doesn't get her own book in this. I mean, Leia's in Splinter of the Mind's Eye, but her story is only told in relation to Luke. Why, like, everybody knows it's the big three. She's sort of like, I guess, the unfortunately, the bones of the story. You know, like, to draw an analogy to Star Trek, everybody wants to learn about Kirk. Everybody wants to talk about Spock. Oh, Bones is cool. You know, like, and I'm sort of stuck there. I'm like, Bones could use a book.
Yeah, me too.
I'd like to learn more about Bones. That'd be cool. And I would have liked to see what they would have done at the time with a book about Princess Leia. That would have been interesting. Yeah.
No, it would have been really interesting, honestly, because there's, again, I feel like, well, and yeah, she really is and ends up being a character that you could have given this kind of backstory to and everything. So, so I got to ask you, fluidics in a ship? I was just like, oh, okay, that seems weird. As a, I don't know.
It was a plot point. Obviously, he like sketched out the story, and he's like, okay, so what can go wrong? But at the same time, it speaks to, you know, what we all know and love about Han and Chewie and the Falcon and everything like that is that it's their hot rod, and they'll do whatever they need to do to make it run. So it's a crazy idea, but. You know, it's just like the Falcon's hyperdrive not working in Empire Strikes Back. It's needed so that they can have something happen later that benefits the characters or hinders them in some way. It's a crazy idea, but it works. It works pretty well. So I wanted to ask you, though, like, I actually wound up, because I'm reading this on Kindle, I quote unquote took notes on the Kindle from Han Solo at Star's End. Han Solo's Revenge, my amount of note taking was off the charts in comparison. Like, I was highlighting all of these passages and everything. Did you find yourself sort of like mentally checking things? It was like, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's a neat reference. Oh, that's great. Because I thought that the dialogue and specifically the dialogue about Han was better this time around. It was more solid and more illustrative of him.
Yeah, I felt like just Daly's style, as we talked about before, had really matured here when it came to writing Star Wars. And I was never pulled out by a dialogue that felt too like 1950s. Colloquialisms. This just felt more like a Star Wars script.
Yeah.
So yeah, I felt like the words coming out of the character's mouth felt very organic to them, and it felt like a Star Wars story in that. And yeah, just the thought process behind characters thinking about Han or Han thinking something or Chewie, all of that I felt like was even more perfect in compared to the first book. Like, I really felt like Daly is starting to kind of nail this character,
yeah,
and the world in a way that was really nice. I really enjoyed it.
What's also very interesting is that he really makes the Bollocks and Blue Max characters, the droid pair, he fleshes them out more, but he also talks more about how droids are treated, which is interesting because Tristan came on Great Shot Kid recently and we started talking about droids and, you know, open questions. Are they truly sentient? Daly very much, and I know I made reference when we talked about the first book and everything, but in the Star Wars radio drama, Daly very much falls in the camp of they're not really people. They're, you know, it's, you know, an imitation of personality. It's not an actual personality. But in this one, he seems to have revised his thoughts because he speaks specifically about Bollocks and Blue Max, you know, being free to move around and how they are able to, you know, help them out and like sneak through the spaceport at one point is because nobody questions that an automata would do anything on its own, would have any sort of, and that to me is an interesting foreshadowing of what happens with 3PO and R2. Is they're able to walk around the Death Star because people are just like, it's droids, whatever. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yet nobody ever thinks to stop a droid and say, hey, what are you doing here? They just see a droid and Bollock says, everyone always presumes that a droid is owner imprinted and task programmed. After all, why else would a droid be working? And it's so interesting because there's a whole discussion in the first book where Bollock says basically to have purpose is a reason for existence. And that this follows that thread. And you see that he's developing these droids distinct from where R2 and 3PO go, but on a parallel course.
I really, I think that's so interesting because Last Shot has a lot to do with droids and the new character L3, the new droid, is very involved with a droid type storyline. Like, so I don't want to say too much other than to say that's very much a thread that is in Last Shot and may be part of Solo. Is this idea of droids and how they're treated and those kind of things. So I'm fascinated to see where they go with that, if they kind of use this as an opportunity to talk about something that Star Wars really hasn't talked about in canon on screen.
Yes, and I think it's very important to say in canon on screen because, again, I'm so sorry that I keep referencing the radio drama, but there is a specific exchange where Perry King, playing Han in that version, actually says to 3PO, he says, I'm not a fan of machines that talk back. So what's interesting to me is knowing Daly wrote that and he wrote these, I'm very interested to see in the next book where Bollocks and Blue Max go. Because Han seems to be developing an affection for them. And I don't know whether this will tie in, fall through, whether the publication dates, like I want to see if this is one thread that Daly follows versus another thread that he had, you know, in the radio drama, just because I think it's so interesting to see that at work. And obviously Lucas was a fan of his work because he did both. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to draw that comparison.
Well, and I thought was so interesting here is the way in which Bollocks and Blue Max are integrated into the story and they're important parts of this story. You know, so they have started to become as much of the crew of the Falcon as Chewie and Han, which is cool. And they're really fun characters because they both have their own personalities, but they work together, obviously, with, you know, Blue Max being inside Bollocks' chest, basically. And I just thought that was really neat, to the way in which he continued. In fact, they save the day at the very beginning. They're the ones who help, you know, take out the slavers and allow Chewie and Han to retake the Falcon so they can get away at that point. And then they're important parts of the rest of the story, too, like you talked about. They're able to do some things that a normal person wouldn't be able to do because nobody cares about droids. So it really does. That makes them a really fun part of this daily verse that he's kind of created here.
And I will also say that so long as we're talking about, you know, characters that Daly has created and is running with, the character of Galandro what I have to give him a lot of credit for is he describes him perfectly, and I know, without even having to check, who was in his mind when he described Galandro. Lee Van
Tom
Cleef.
Selleck?
No. Lee Van Cleef from A Few Dollars More. The sequel to Fistful of Dollars. And also from Good, Bad, and Ugly. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like, I can see him. Galandro looks like that in my head. He's, maybe a little riff on that or something, but like, anybody who's seen the Man with No Name trilogy, or actually he's in Escape from New York as well. Like, that's a Galandro type figure to me. And he's the old, he's the killer gunfighter that Clint Eastwood's Man with No Name has to go up against. Like, so it instantly teases that out. I love Galandro. What did you think of Galandro?
Oh, I liked him too. He kind of actually reminded me of Cad Bane.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I could see that.
Like,
sure.
He really is just the bounty hunter out there for the money. You know, he's just the hired gun. He'll kill people if he has... I mean, basically, he's going to do whatever he has to do, you know? But he's only doing it for the money.
Right.
But what I thought was fascinating was that he's also the character, and the two characters we have with the corporate sector authority are a part of this operation that they're in because they feel like they can make a difference from inside rather than outside. And they tell Han, you might just try it someday.
Yes, that is actually really great because there's a specific quote at the end where somebody says, so I've given up sleeping with one eye open, and in return I've got a... Galandro says this. In return I've got a future.
Yep.
Don't be surprised if you feel this way yourself somewhere down the line. It's such a beautiful foreshadowing of where we expect Han to have gone. And it's where everybody wanted Han to go, was to become the good guy and to settle down. And I definitely think that actually speaks to what I think is a really open opportunity for them to do with a series or a movie or books or something set between Jedi and The Force Awakens.
Appetite, because Last Shot is about that, because Han and Lando in the present time period after Return of the Jedi are dealing with that struggle. How do we become men that aren't always on the run and settle down? Like, how do we make that change when we've spent our entire lives living one way? How do we do something different? We both want to, but it's a real struggle to make that switch. So, yeah. For the most part, I think it's done well. So I definitely recommend it. But I love that Daly, points that out to Han here in the story, because it references, the fact that he might feel the pull to do something better with his life at one point. And that's what we kind of end up seeing in A New Hope, which is, maybe I should care about other people more than just maybe I should stop just being cynical.
But see, that's the interesting thing is Galandro isn't less cynical. Galandro is he's simply, this is just a smarter play because I don't have to, I've got a cause. I don't care what cause it is. I just want to be able to sleep at night without thinking I'm going to be assassinated. And it's really, I don't know. I just think that there's such fertile ground to explore with that. And I would love, who knows how it's going to turn out with a solo movie and everything like that. But wouldn't it be so great to have them come back and do at least one Han book that has reference to this time period, like heavy reference to this time period, like a sequel to it that's set after Return of the Jedi? So that you're actually put them back in the corporate sector or something like that. I think that would be a really interesting sort of thing for them to go down. Because, again, I think it would go toward expanding the universe back out again so that you're not just dealing with, the bipolar factions of,
Well, and
Rebel
that could
and
be something
Empire.
That, we've got the Favreau show coming.
Yeah.
So maybe they said it in that time period, and maybe they use it as a way. I mean, who knows? But maybe they use that as an opportunity to expand the galaxy in ways that we just haven't seen yet. So that it,
right.
it you know, because it, again, 30 years, it's a fertile ground to play in. And there's just, I mean, the galaxy's wide open at that point. So,
but I would just love to have a series that uses Han in specific.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think it would be really neat. And honestly, with Last Shot as a reference, I think you have opportunities then to be able to play with that. The only other thing that we know from canon that Han did is he had a racing company,
right?
With ships. So, you know, yeah, it could be, again, it could be interesting. So who knows? But yeah, this was, I would say, kind of coming down to it, for me, this was a better book. I will agree with you completely. It was more tightly plotted. I will say that Daly, sometimes his style of writing just in general is a little bit odd, in that the way he kind of describes what's happening in the action, it doesn't always flow as well as I want it to.
Sure. Yeah, the Chewie trying to get away from the stampeding animals, mm-hmm. that's sort of,
yeah.
that's a little clunky. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. But just as per what he's doing with the characters and how it's feeling, I would say it's head and shoulders above the first one, honestly. I really feel like he's found his footing now. So it makes me really interested to dive in to the next book and just see where we're going to go in Lost Legacy.
Yeah, and I completely agree with you on all of those points. This definitely feels like a book. Like, you could make the argument that Star's End feels like a book where they're like, oh my gosh, we got to get Star Wars stuff out. Like right now, people want to buy it. And this feels like somebody who had time to sit down and actually plot it all out and say, oh yeah, and I'm going to make these cool characters too. And I'll also say that his the female character he creates is really intriguing, mm-hmm. really interesting. And, you know, so hats off to him for that too. You know, making sure.
Yeah,
to...
I actually really liked her character. She kind of felt like Sana Solo a little bit.
Yes, she does. You're right.
So again, I feel like there have been some ways in which canon has kind of really referenced a lot of the things and took it some inspiration from Daly. So yeah, and just this is just fun stuff. And it's nice to just kind of sit down and read a book like this and just enjoy the universe. What I think is so interesting is that this is a story that so many people, I think, when they think Han Solo, they think of this series in a lot of the ways that people, when they think of Superman, they still think of Chris Reeves.
Yep.
I think this series has had that kind of impact on what people thought of Han Solo, specifically, of course, when the special editions came out.
Yeah.
But in general, I think that this is still kind of the benchmark for the characterization of who Han is. And I think that's one of the things Daly has to be praised of. He's found a way to connect you with that character where he feels like a precursor to that, but he's still very much in line, and so you never question that this is Han Solo.
Yep. Yep. So I think we're both giving it our stamp of approval.
Absolutely. I mean, if we had a stamp, we'd be hitting it.
Yeah. So. Yes. For
but
sure.
John, if anybody wants to hit you up and talk a little bit more about the Kessel Runner, where can they find you?
Oh, well, gosh, you can find me as Kessel Junkie on your social network of choice. Usually I'm just sharing what I'm listening to on Twitter half the time. You can also find me right here on the Nerd Party, co-hosting Great Shot Kid with Mike Schindler, where we talk about the aspects of filmmaking that sometimes get a little bit overlooked by people. And you can also find me out there in the ether, co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig. So Matt, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter, MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network with Drea Kaufman talking all about Harry Potter, one chapter at a time. Owlpost. That's where you'll find us, so make sure you check that out. I'm over on the Trek FM network talking about all things Deep Space Nine with my friend Chris over on the Orb. And then we talk about every fandom we can under the sun, if we can fit it in, over on the 602 Club. So make sure you check out that show. It's a blast. John's over there quite frequently, so I know you'll love it. You can find me on Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney as we talk all about films through the lens of faith. But John, with all that said, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matt, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.